Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is Wednesday, July 23rd, 2003. Today's session is Triggers, Gut, and the White Bear. Session 3 of Growing Spirituality, Expanding Awareness of the Presence of God, presented by Andrew Rognes. The number is ROA 2003-03. Let's listen in.
And by being late, this is a rough quote. I meant to have this on top of the board. I'll have to do it. Oh, this is a bad pen.
That is a bad pen. Can you read?
See if I can. When the spirit within, is that a little better?
Yes.
When the spirit within meets the spirit out. I just thought this was a good quote for today. This is George McDonald. But I've lived with that quote in a lot of different ways for a long time. Just to frame a little bit. Today we're, I think I entitled this session, The Gut, no, what was it? The Gut, White Bear.
Triggers,
thank you.
Triggers.
All right, good. For those of you who have participated in one or two of my other previous sessions this week, we'll do a little more experiential stuff today. If someone is listening in from the recording studio, this mythical recording studio, let's begin. I'm Andrew Rognes. did any of you remember seeing the movie Oh God? George Burns and John Denver. It's been some time. I mean, it was a really fun movie, and I enjoyed it a great deal. There was one little part in there, however, that I think probably captures often our practice and understanding of prayer, and yet I find it really wrong. The more I live and experience the presence of God. That was when George Burns, God, is sort of at the tail end of his being, revealing himself to John Denver. And John Denver's a little panicked about this moment that he's no longer going to be able to be with God. And he says, well, how will I talk with you? And at that moment, George Burns says, you talk, I'll listen. You know, kind of a cute line. But it is, to some degree, our understanding of prayer too often that we think, okay, yeah, prayer is a process of throwing up words or out words. And we trust that God listens to us. But if we stop there, we're missing half of the exercise and reality of prayer, that God does speak to us. Maybe not with words, though I think once in a while we hear very clearly a still small voice, as the Old Testament prophet talks about. And sometimes that can be in a very literal way, though rarely for us. But nonetheless, God does speak to us. And God's way of speaking to us is a language that we're not accustomed to exercising and appropriating and experiencing. So we're going to continue to talk about that today. Prayer is both talking and listening. We affirm these basic truths about our faith. That is that God is everywhere present. That's very solid first article theology for us within the Christian family. God is everywhere present. And God is a loving God who longs to be in intimate connection and communication with us. Those are very foundational aspects of our faith that is a part of appropriating a deeper, or growing in deeper spirituality. It's sometimes amazing to believe that, but it is true. And to deepen our spiritual awareness is to better access the presence of God. God is present. Now, that access to God, the sense of God's presence, has a lot to do with what it might be called a sense of inner vision. In some of the exercises that we've done, I've asked people to ask God to call to mind, yada-da-da-da-da, something. And God, in fact, does use our own, both when we're intentionally meditating, our own thoughts that come, and God also will use thoughts out of the blue. You know, I mean, if God is everywhere present, God is certainly within me. And it should not be a surprise to me that thoughts come to me. Lots of us have the experience, for example, of all of a sudden we think about someone. We've not thought about them for a long time. They don't live near us. And for some reason we think about them. Once in a while we act on that. We give them a call or whatever, and they say, "I can't believe you called me." Well, is that accidental? Is it just a kind of some electron, you know, because our logical mind wants to believe that? But at a spiritual level, we realize, no, God who moves and lives within me and moves and lives within all parts of creation, there is a connection there. And it's no accident that those thoughts will come. But we're not accustomed often to being attuned to those random thoughts that pop out of nowhere. And we're not accustomed to raising the question, is this something that God wants me to pay attention to or not? Growing deeper and being willing to move into this is to be more open to those possibilities. Many people I know in psychology, particularly Jungian psychology, spend a little time looking at dream awareness. And that's fascinating, and I certainly have done some of that myself. But I think it's an interesting comment that I ran across, and this is from Stalking Wolf, an Apache Indian, who said that God only uses dreams out of desperation for when we're not listening otherwise. And I think that's a good comment on dreams, because dreams are difficult to understand. God will use dreams, but when I think about my own dreams and all how jumbled they are, and it is tough to sort them out, I can imagine that thought is right. You know, God will use dreams, but only out of desperation when we're not otherwise listening and being attuned to God. When you think of, you know, this is an easy picture, you know, to sort of understand. When you think of a spider web and how a spider creates this amazing, intricate web, etc., and, you know, this is sort of like our understanding, or to me, is one just physical image that's helpful to understand the connectedness that we have with all of creation, through God, that it is God, the Spirit, who moves in all things, that is this web. And if one part on the web, you know, is moving, it may be felt at all points on the web. So God not only uses thoughts that come from within, because the Spirit that moves in all things is within me, but God can also use literally the voice of others or the behavior of animals, four-legged ones, winged ones. God, the possibilities for God are infinite. In terms of, you know, and as we are open to those possibilities, we begin to see them more. And as we see them more and have a sense of how to process whether or not, as somebody asked the other day, you asked this, how do I know this thought is just something I came up with, or, you know, really something God wanted me to pay attention to? We're going to do a little bit with that today. And just to give an illustration of that, several years ago, I was leading a number of, as I did for many years, kids on canoe trips, both through Wilderness Canoe Base up in the end of the Gunflint Trail, which is very northern and eastern portion of Minnesota, the Minnesota-Canadian border. And then in my parish ministry, I also continued to do that for many years. But I had a group of kids, and we split our group for a day. The girls wanting to go off kind of on their own adventure for a bit, and the guys, we did something else. And we were going to come back together at an agreed time and agreed place. Well, the girls didn't show up at the agreed time and agreed place. And they were going to take a dip, if you know the area at all, into a lake just south of Lac La Croix. And we were going to meet in the evening. They didn't show up. The next morning, I kept kind of looking for them, and they still didn't show up. Later in the day, they still hadn't shown up. So it was almost 24 hours later. And I'm starting to worry, because after all, I am the one in charge of this whole batch. And it's all going to fall on me when we go home and I tell the parents, your girls are up there someplace. I don't know. So I told our guys, I said, you know, I'll just feel better if I go out canoeing, just so I can get on a spot in the lake where I can see a little further, just to see, are they coming or not, or do I need to even get more worried? But not too long from the campsite where we were at, I came to one of these points, and in that area of the country, lots of the lakes have lots of islands, and it can be very confusing for someone who doesn't know, you know, how to travel and read the signs or a map. And so I came to a point where there's long, skinny island, and I realized, looking at it, that a group coming from the other side, it'd be a 50-50 chance which side of that island they'd go on. I mean, there wasn't one logical way that they would come. So now I'm thinking, okay, if I pick the wrong way and they happen to be coming the other side, I could be going for days, you know, and they would be back. So what do I do? Now, at that point, having paddled some, just the natural rhythm of paddling, calm waters, my mind had moved to that alpha level of mind and was more relaxed, and you know, the sense of inner vision is more accessible. Our mind is more powerful for that at that point. So I stopped paddling and just took some good deep breaths, as we've done also, just to, you know, kind of still my heart and mind, and to be more aware. It so happened that there was a crow or a raven quite a ways above, but just circling around, and I watched that, and instead of a perfect circle, it would come to a point and then make kind of a straight deal, and then it would circle and then make a straight deal. And I thought, you know, the natives believed, at least certain tribes, that crow and ravens were very much a messenger of the Great Spirit. So I thought, well, 50-50 chance. That's the logical side of the mind. But then I checked that out in a different way, which I'll teach, and I mentioned the other, I think, in my first session. Checked out kind of a physical response to that decision, and went that direction that the crow was flying. And as soon as I went around the tip of the island, there was the group of girls coming at me. There are lots of stories like that in my life experience, just because of having learned along the way to do this. And I tell you that just because I'm a believer in the presence of God, that God speaks not only within, but also without, from humans, from music, from creation. And as we increase our awareness of the presence of God in our lives, we are more open to how God might be speaking to us in lots of different ways. All right. The logical mind fights this. And I mentioned that the one book of Tom Brown Jr. that I asked them to pick up, because I wasn't sure if they'd have any here at Holden. And actually they do. They have one of his, he has 6, 7, 8 kind of guidebooks, you know, wilderness survival skills, tracking stuff. And the library or the bookstore here has one. And the bookstore also has The Vision, which is the fourth of his first more autobiographical books. And that's a stretch, just if you were to pick it up. If you've not read any of this stuff before, you're going to think it's sort of like Carlos Castaneda on peyote, you know. So I wouldn't recommend you start there. Tom Brown Jr. writes a great deal about Stalking Wolf, an Apache Indian who was really an amazing person, both skill-wise as well as far as his ability as a shaman, and who had a vision early in his own life that he sensed a call to move very deeply into his spirituality, to find out what was universally true of all world religions, not just within his niche, but within all world religions. And so this little quote, his teachings, meaning Stalking Wolf, of the things of the spirit were very simple, so simple most people could not believe or accept them. He had said, modern man cannot know the worlds, these universes beyond his own ego. The logical mind will never allow man to expand beyond the ego or the flesh, for that is where the logical mind feels safe. Modern thought is the prison of the soul and stands between man and his spiritual mind. The logical mind cannot know absolute faith, nor can it know pure thought, for the logic feeds upon logic and does not accept things that cannot be known and proven by the flesh. Thus, man has created a prison for himself and for his spirit because he lacks belief and purity of thought. Faith needs no proof nor logic, yet man needs proof before he can have faith. Man then has created a cycle which cannot be broken, or for where proof is needed, there can be no faith. So I'll leave it at that. I want us to do a little exercise, and we're going to deal with the white bear first. This has to do with how you deal with distractions. We're going to do just a quick breathing to relax our minds a little bit, and then I'm going to ask you, as a part of the meditation, can you all snap your fingers?
No.
Okay. No, don't worry about it. Just slap your leg if you can't snap your fingers. So I'll give you an alternative. So this is just playful, this one. So close your eyes and take a nice deep breath. Let it out slowly. Take another nice deep breath. Let it out slowly. A third time, a deep breath. This time, hold it. And when you feel your pulse or hear it or it's uncomfortable, let that breath go. Now I'm going to just ask for you to let your mind wander wherever you want, except I don't want you to think about the white bear. If you do think about the white bear while your mind is wandering, however, it's okay, but just snap your finger whenever you think about the white bear. But let your mind wander. Don't think about the white bear. But if you do, snap your finger. All right, that's good enough. I think you got the point before you ever got into it. I happened to pick this up on, I don't know, a PBS program or something where they were doing research, and they would put an individual in the room instead of snapping the fingers. It was one of those bells on the counter, you know, that you ring. And it was just funny to watch these poor people, you know, bing, bing, bing. And of course, whenever you hear someone snapping, you know, it compounds the problem. It's like, no, they're the white bear again. They be quiet. Did any of you have problems with the worship? If you were here, you know, a couple of nights, with these last two nights, with some of the kids squawking, screaming, and, oh, I wish they'd be quiet, and I don't want to listen. And the more you're focused on the distraction, the more power it has, of course, right? And for us, when we're meditating or praying, there are always going to be distractions and something that's going to, you know, whether it's things that we have pressing on our agenda or some noise someplace that's not a nice, you know, just kind of a droning noise, that's easier to deal with, but it's other things that will distract us. And the more in meditation or prayer that we kind of fight that distraction, the greater power it has in our meditations. So how then to take, you know, to empower ourselves over distractions? Just a little tool. This time I'll have you at your own pace just repeat the breathing process with a held breath at the third breath. And then just go ahead and think about anything. But so I'm not going to even try to guide your meditation. But if you are aware of a noise or a thought or something that feels like it's a distraction, what I want you to do at that point is to simply picture whatever it is in your mind, visualize it, and then shrink it down in your mind. Just watch it grow smaller and smaller, until it's small enough to just kind of pass out of your body, however you visualize doing that. So that's the exercise. We'll just take a few minutes to do that and to experiment dealing with distractions. Well, let's kind of pull ourselves together as a group. What was any distractions that you had to deal with? Just as a group. Oh, something upstairs. Yeah. What was it like to try to visualize that? Did that work for you, or?
It wasn't very helpful to shrink it. So I just kind of said, "Oh, there's a kid just playing, and it's a happy thing, and just don't let that be the center."
So. Okay. So. Yeah, I mean, for some people it works to visually reduce it in its strength and size.
I think you have to practice that.
Yeah, it's not the only technique, but what's happening, well, anybody, any other experience with? Yeah.
For me, that did help, but I needed to have something that I was visually picturing as my focus, my image. If I was thinking of nothing, the more things would just continually
happen. Yeah.
It's hard to just be totally
perfect. Isn't that something? I mean, that was one of my reactions, too, is like, oh, gosh, I didn't give them anything to think about. You know, it was an open book with nothing written on the page, and I was kind of panicked about that. But, yes, we're...
Yeah, Kevin, things pop into my mind, words, a couple of images, and I realized I didn't know whether I should regard them as distractions. And, you know, part of it was my agenda for the day, and I thought that that is a distraction, and I eliminated it. I saw this image of my children hiking up to Tolan Lake, and I thought, is that a distraction, or is that something I'm supposed to pay attention to?
Yeah, to process or not. Sure. Yeah.
I found that I had a worse headache than I thought I had. I started visualizing it, and it was kind of like this side of my head in a big black blob that turned purple, and I could just feel it, and I was trying to shrink it and then breathe it out when I let my air go out, and it's actually much better now. And I didn't even hear the kids upstairs. I was so concentrating on, wow, it hurts, wow. And then, so I think it's better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that reaching the that slower level of mind, if you weren't here when if you were on an EEG, you know, normally our mind would go on a, you know, on the graph paper like that, and so part of the relaxation is to try to smooth that out a bit, because we know from experience that it's a more powerful state of mind. Our memory is better. We're able to do some body-mind control, and headaches is, you know, one thing that you can do. Not with all headaches, but the milder ones, yeah. Interesting. Yes?
I didn't hear a sound until you moved.
So?
And I was on a journey.
I'm sorry I interrupted.
I just heard you walk two steps or something, and I opened my eyes thinking, oh, man. And everyone else's eyes are so shut. But I went on a total journey. I started with the bear on the trail, you know, and then I didn't want the. And then I always tell myself here at home, I have to tell myself to look up. And so to move me on that trail, I just looked up in my mind, and I saw the mountains. And I just went rolling over the mountains on my trail, and the bear disappeared, and then the mountains became waves, and I was on the ocean floating. And then the waves became heads of children that I know and love, the Hmong children that I've been with. And it became children, and they were dancing in a circle. And it, you know, it was just so beautiful, and then you moved.
Cool. Who needs drugs?
Well, yes. My stomach was growling. It was a tiger in a tank. You know, you're aware of the stillness. So what happens, like in your own body, you become so aware of where, you know, it's a normal physiology, but. Yeah. Suddenly, so you also become, you turn in as well as turn out.
Yeah, good. Were you able to deal with your stomach?
Yeah, I quieted down.
But as far as a distraction?
The distraction, I think our own bodies become a distraction.
Yeah.
I'm uncomfortable and I squirm, or
yeah,
I'm fighting sleep, or I, you know, my iron isn't comfortable, or yeah, I don't like, he's too close, or, you know, I think those are physical distractions,
yes,
that we must overcome as much as,
yeah,
as our image.
And, you know, what you experienced was, whether via image or just acknowledgement, what the process is wanting to do is, instead of telling yourself, I can't think about this, which is to think about whatever the white bear is, infinite possibilities, it is rather to acknowledge the presence of that distraction and not fight it, but rather to let it have some way of letting it go. And distractions will pop back up.
I was very aware of my body too. I needed to take a shower or something because I was aware of itchiness, you know?
Okay.
And so I was in a hunt for distractions because the focal point was, you know, pay attention to distractions and then imagine them and do something with them. And I found that as I was on this hunt for itchiness and fly around me, I would visualize it or something, and then they would fly, they would flow off into an abyss, whatever this image was, and that was really helpful in that it went down. It almost brought me deeper into a state of, I don't know, groundedness or centeredness. It was a neat thing, using the distraction to bring me to a deeper place.
Cool.
Yeah.
I found it wasn't negative either.
Oh.
I was able to, you know,
yeah,
focus on it, and then from there,
yeah,
I could block out my environment.
Yeah, yeah.
But one of my distractions was I was so worried that you were going to stop us before I had time to really get rid of this thing. I got to let that go, okay? Okay, I just got to let that go. I was so worried.
The labyrinth that's up here, isn't it something? Well, that's terrific. You have a sense, anyway, of dealing with distractions, because any prayer, meditation, corporate worship, whatever, will have those. And the more you fight them, the more power they have. The more you acknowledge them and just process whatever technique, and even to make them the way you get deeper. That's very good. Well, I wanted to also then talk a little bit, Morris, you mentioned, you know, trying to decide whether or not this is a distraction or something that's you need to pay attention to. And we'll get to that, but before we do that, I want to talk just a little bit about what are sometimes called trigger mechanisms. Was it yesterday? No, first day I taught, I forget. Yeah. I taught a couple of methods of relaxation that included a trigger mechanism. I mean, one was the more than just the three breaths. I had us doing some body relaxation with breathing with each part of our body that were tensing and relaxing. And then finally, as we've kind of moved through our whole body with muscle tension and relaxing, and breathing with each muscle tension and relaxation. Finally, reaching a point where we're holding that last breath. And depending on the noise level, you can often hear the heartbeat, you know, in your inner ear, or certainly you can feel the pulsation there, or maybe at other points in your body, or even just to hold it and wait until it's uncomfortable. That held breath itself is called a trigger mechanism. It functions the same way as if you're going to say your prayers. You know, just this physical gesture can be a reminder that, oh, I am thinking now, you know, I'm more open to thoughts that I want to express to God and to hear that God may be speaking to me. Even holding your hands, closing your eyes, we teach our children this as a trigger mechanism. Triggers lose a little bit of power and potency the more frequently they're used, oddly enough, in most people's experience. So you come to church and the preacher says, "The Lord be with you," everybody responds, "and also with you." You know, in a way, that's a trigger mechanism. It's verbal, but it's saying, you know, we're about to pray together. We're, you know, it calls attention to the moment, and the whole rhythm starts to change. What a trigger mechanism does in meditation is it just helps you move more quickly at need from this more kind of active, rational, agenda state of mind into the more openness level of mind more quickly. And it's a handy thing to sort of have in your back pocket at need. For example, in my ministry, because I'm often visiting people in the hospital who are in a tough situation, you know, I'll have Chase there or whatever, you're busy with the traffic, you're stressed out, you're nervous, you're whatever is going on. But you get to that room, and it is helpful. You enter the room, and nobody has to know what you're doing. You just take a deep breath and hold it, and all of a sudden, you're remembering things. Your mind is settling. It just happens quickly. And you're recognizing, oh, I'm not the Messiah here. The Messiah is already present. It's for me to be more in tune with God's presence and caring for these people, and it just, you know, it can be a powerful thing at that moment that helps me. See, when I talked earlier about the point of meditation is not an end in and of itself, it's intrinsically powerful, but meditation is to help us live our lives. The more powerful state of mind, sacred silence, where we're more in touch with our inner vision, the presence of God, that state of mind is to help us on a dynamic daily basis. As we're interacting with people, you get a phone call from somebody, and you know it's someone you're in conflict with, or it's a family member who's stressed out, and try the trigger, you know, method of at critical points where you really want to be carefully in tune with the presence of God. So if you're practicing using a trigger as you integrate it into moments of silence and prayer, you can pull it out of your back pocket when you feel like, oh, is my mind at this level? You know, I can't tell the person on the phone, give me 5 minutes here, would you? You know, to settle down. The trigger just helps us move quickly into that. It's a very nice technique. We also did an exercise where visually we were imagining the number 3, it shrunk down, and then we'd see the word deeper. This is a mental way to relax. And then the number 2, and we watched it shrink down until it disappeared, and then the word deeper. The number 1, shrink down until it disappeared, the word deeper. And while I had people doing that, I asked you to hold your fingers like this, which in a lotus yoga position, you know, as a common body position. It's similar to, you know, what we do within our tradition, folding hands, but it's a little different so that it may reserve it for you for another trigger mechanism. That if you practice this one of holding your body in that way, then at need, you know, it's very discreet. You know, you're not being obvious about it. Jesus, after all, had the good sense to tell us to not wear our piety visibly, but to take it in the closet. I mean, you can be discreet, and yet it's powerful. We have powerful responses to those trigger mechanisms that we've practiced in other meditation points in our lives. So that's the point of a trigger. I'm going to teach also Thursday, maybe? I forget. A fox walk and wide angle vision. There are different ways of changing how you're walking and looking at the world as techniques that help increase awareness as well as slow what's happening with your brain waves and make you more open and aware to God's presence. It is what I was using in that example that I gave of the canoe trip, of being sure that I was at that level of mind that had greater awareness of not only within but without, and to the possibilities of how God might be speaking. Now, to see the crow fly and go a certain direction, or to think about your boys hiking, or to think about, you know, how do I know this is from God? In brief, what I find for me, and maybe you discover other ways on your own, but it is definitely a body response that probably we all share in common and have. Sometimes we call it a conscience, you know. In our tradition, maybe that's what we've tended to talk about it, the sense of, or in cartoons we have that image of the devil and the angel arguing on our shoulders, you know, back and forth. But our body has some natural responses to things that are the wrong thing to do and directions that are the right way. The wrong thing meaning how God would just soon we didn't pursue, and the right thing being what God is calling us to. If you can imagine, you know, a situation in which you were, you know, let's go back to your teen years and someone's suggesting that, you know, you get a fifth from the store, you got an older sibling, and we're going to have a party and we're going to get drunk, you know. Lots of us might have kind of react to that on the inside with a tightening in our solar plexus. It's, you know, something in our gut that's tightening up. It's an uncomfortable feeling. We probably all know what that's like in different circumstances. I mean, I think you can imagine that. You just know in your gut it's wrong. Is that just you? Well, maybe. But I really believe that God uses our body responses to help us understand which way to go. Let's say you need to talk to your spouse about something that is very difficult. Now, you know, a lot of us resist that, hoping it'll go away. But when we check within ourselves whether or not it's what we ought to do, there may also be a response at which, at a deep level, there's a relaxation, a letting go, a sense of peace deep within. Instead of the tensing in the gut, there is a sense of peace, a letting go. And in this level of mind, where we're more in tune with our inner vision, we also will apprehend better how we're feeling on the inside. Just as, you know, you were aware of your stomach, you know, we're also aware of our body responses to those questions. Now, you can take that issue. Your kids come to mind. They're on a hike. Now, to check out whether or not you should pay attention to that, you don't give a multiple choice to yourself. You know, should I be concerned with them, or should I let it go, or do I not need to talk to Christine about this? I mean, that's not going to get you direction. A body response, I mean, when you ask God, is this something I need to pay attention to, you put it in a yes or no form in your own meditation. Whatever it was that came to mind for you, to ask, literally, is this, God, is this something you're wanting me to look at? And then be in tune with how your body is responding to that. You know,
that because my body responds, I mean, and I know what the word that I was given was definitely a good word, but I have personal fear about my ability to do follow that word.
Yeah.
You know, when I see, like, it's like the wine, me, I mean, you know, I don't know if I can do that type of thing.
Sure.
And that gives me anxiety.
Well, you're in good company. Moses didn't want to do what he wanted it was told to do either. So, you know, we none of us think we're adequate to what God calls us to do.
So,
none of us.
So, you know, and to kind of figure out which one of those feelings is, you know, is, so I guess that's angst rather than.
Yeah.
That's kind of a hard line to.
Yeah, and like anything, again, I've talked about how important it is with all of this stuff to recognize that for most of us, we're learning the ABCs. And so as you begin to move in some of these directions with prayer and meditation practice, you know, it doesn't feel, I mean, you're kind of not sure, is that a D or is that a B?
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
You know, so it takes some practice, and we also talked about this, but it's an important thing to remember, that in addition to checking out those things within yourself and in your own meditation practice, that is why God calls us into community. In terms of whether spiritual advisor, one-on-one, or in a small group, or trusted friend, or wherever, you know, I think that's a very vital part of checking this out. Because, frankly, we know so many stories of people who have done wacky things and claiming that God told them to do it, you know? And so there's good reason to be
checking that.
Careful.
Mm-hmm. In fact, because of that, I'm seeing a counselor this afternoon at 1 o'clock. I signed up to see that.
Yeah.
Just because of that experience.
Sure.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Is Lucifer peeking around the corner when you're doing that?
What do you think? I'm dodging the question here. I'm sorry.
Well, he's a great manipulator, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And we can be fooled.
Well, not only can we, you know, if there is an external force of evil, certainly we're easily fooled, and we want to fool ourselves lots of times.
Right. And that's the hard part
yeah.
for a lot of us.
Yeah.
Is to know.
Yeah.
But if God is loving, it's a loving thing to do. And I think that's one of the things that you analyze after your meditation. Is this a loving thing for that person? I'll give you a bit of an example. My husband was on the holding board for a number of years. In 1992, he left home. He got involved with a young woman in his office. It was 2 years of utter chaos. At the end of the 2 years, he was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and he died within a month of diagnosis. In the hospital, I had started a meditation program because at the same time our pastor had gotten involved with a woman who was counseling and left, so I had no spiritual advisor at the time. So I started doing a lot of personal meditation. And I went to the hospital after they had done the biopsy. They said my husband would be dead within a few days, that he wouldn't wake up. And there was this young woman sitting in by his bedside yelling at me to get the hell out of here. What do I do? We're not divorced. We, you know, nothing like this. I have 3 children. And how do I deal with this situation? And I went back and did some meditation. And the only thing it said is that the only thing that would go into that room was love. And as hard as it was, I went the next morning and I put the sign on the door, the only thing that will enter this room is love. And I went to this young woman and I said, if you have to hold his hand all day, that's fine, but the children and I need to see him as well. And she began to cry because she was afraid that I was going to toss her out because she had no legal right to be there. Once the love entered that room, that helped. But if I hadn't sat and meditated about it, I thought I was going to lose my mind. What was I going to do? This man was going to be gone in 4 days, and he had been in my life for 26 years. And so that was part of that meditation. Is this a loving thing that came to me? And it was. And that has been since what I measure when I do meditation and thoughts come in, is this a loving thing? And to me that, if, you know, when you talk about the devil sneaking in and manipulating, he doesn't manipulate if it's a loving thing. Because that, to me, that's what it has always been.
It's very nice.
Yeah, that's a very powerful thought and experience. Thank you. Yesterday we also mentioned, as a question came up, you know, what is the core and heart of our faith? And Jesus was pretty clear about that, and saying, love God, love your neighbor, love yourself. Upon this, all of the prophets and law hinges. It all hinges on that. So our teaching is also, of our church, of our faith, is also instructive and informative in terms of processing those thoughts that come to mind in meditation and in checking out those things, yeah. So we have not only our body response and the community, but, you know, really that's the community of saints, isn't it? The teaching that comes, we're grounded in. How are we doing on time? Oh, no. Turn your watches ahead. 4 minutes?
We got 4 minutes.
I was about to say a naughty word. I'll tell you what, that's okay. But I'm going to give you an assignment to take from here. What will be lacking on this is any kind of, you know, small group talking about this, and that's unfortunate, but that's the deal. I would like you to, if you can, if you'd like to, you don't have to, because I can't grade you, can I? So I can't, no accountability here.
Opportunity.
There you go. Given this opportunity, why wouldn't you do it, right? Yeah, Morris was telling me that's a good line. Anyway, you know, take one of those exercises of moving to a more powerful state of mind, that beta level or alpha. I'm dyslexic on that one. I can never remember it. But anyway, you know what I mean, that level of mind that comes as you settle your mind with meditation. Use one of those techniques. Include a trigger, and then as you have reached that more relaxed level of mind, that sacred silence, ask God this question. Ask God to call to mind something that is an issue you need to, that God would like you to look at. You know, ask God to call that to mind. It may be something about your person, or, you know, an interpersonal relationship or work issue or life issue, whatever. You know, ask God to call that to mind. See what comes to mind. And then as a thought comes to mind, then ask God, to check it out. Is this something you want me to pay attention to, God? And then see how your body responds with either that tensing in your gut, which would say, no, this is, whether the tempter or my own desire and whatever, or if there's a sense of release, which is an affirmative body response, an indicator possibly that God would like you to take a look at it. And if you're, you know, concerned about whatever it is and you want to check that out with somebody, obviously, but many of those things are so apparent to us when we give ourselves space and increase our level of awareness. They're very apparent, and probably you're smart enough to see that. But, you know, if it's confusing especially, definitely speak with others to check it out and kind of get their advice. So that's something you can do, and find a shady spot or screened-in porch or whatever you need and take some time. Any other last comments? Because I'll bet you I just used that 4 minutes, didn't I?
I had a little thought when you were talking about triggers, and when someone tells us something shocking or I learn something shocking, one of my initial reactions, I never thought of this before, but is to gasp, kind of go, which makes me hold my breath. So I wonder if that's kind of a response God gives us, that kind of, and you hold your breath, and you kind of feel that heart, and it kind of helps you. I mean, it's an
possibly
anxious thing, but I don't know, I just thought of that.
I've always thought the parenting technique of counting to 10 is probably along that line, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.